Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances, where we talk making money, saving money, and getting the all the way out of debt.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And if you are new to the show and like what you hear today, or if you've been around for a bit and haven't done so already, join our email list so you can receive our free Paychecks and Balances 15-minute money plan, as well as actionable work and money tips and interesting reads to help you get ahead financially and professionally. To get the goods, visit paychecksandbalances.com/email. Again, that's paychecksandbalances.com/email.
And on today's show, we're chatting with Candace Marie, who's going to tell us how she got out of a heap of debt and increased her net worth by 10x. That's a pretty big jump, dog. It's a pretty big jump.
Yeah, man. I think she left us both in the dust. It's not a competition, but you know, these people getting it right in these E streets and these debt streets as well.
Indeed. But before we get into that, and if you follow us on the gram, you might know that Marcus and I were actually in the same space this weekend. So what is that, number 4, 5?
Yeah, I'm losing track, man. You know, it's just becoming such commonplace now, you know, now that I confirmed that you're not a catfish. It's just all up and up from here.
Yeah.
And I'm actually glad, and I wish you would have gave me a little bit of a heads up, but I found out some of the coworkers also got hold of that video, so I'm glad I didn't do anything too outlandish, but it all worked out for the best.
I feel like you're going to talk to me about that after we finish recording this, but that's okay.
No, it's all good. They were like, hey, man, I saw you on the Facebook. I'm like, do we follow each other? But it all worked out for the best.
So one thing I learned is that my on-the-road tech setup is nothing like the at-home tech setup with my pop filter and all this other stuff that people don't care about. So if I sound a little different, that's why. Marcus was in one room. I was recording in the other, trying to be quiet, leaned over. Nonetheless, we were still able to join forces like Voltron. Is that still an acceptable reference, or is there something new that people are joining forces like nowadays?
I would assume it'd be Infinity War or the Avengers, or we could be Deadpool's team, the X-Avengers or whatever his little breakout is. I actually haven't seen Deadpool yet, so hopefully I could correct that before the next podcast.
Yeah, so essentially we're joining forces like whatever you imagine something dope joining forces to be. So here's our conversation with Candace Marie, and we hope you enjoy.
6 years ago, Candace didn't want to check her net worth because she knew it would be in the negatives. To learn more about her own personal finance and share her story, she created Young Yet Wise. This helped her stay on track and learn more about her own money. Today, she has a positive net worth, built up savings, and has paid off over $47,000 in debt, leaving me in the dust by like $17,000. So kudos to her. And she joins us today to share her story with you, the listening audience. She is your friend that helps you realistically reach your money goals while still enjoying life. Welcome to the show, Candace.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. And I think you got me by like $27,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. In terms of getting out of debt. So that's super admirable. And I know we'll talk a lot more about that. But anything else you want to share with the people about your background?
First of all, I just want to say that was just like a great intro. I just wanted to just like chop up that intro, just have it on my website with that voice. I paid off debt. I have a positive net worth. I got let go from my job like the last year I was paying off the debt. So that was like, that threw a little curveball in my story.
Ooh, so was that a layoff situation or one of those?
Yeah, other... I got laid off.
So
fortunately.
So did that feel like a turning point for you? And the reason I asked that, so many stories start with, I got laid off, I got fired, I had a kid, something else happened, and then that set them on the path to whatever amazing thing it is that they're doing. So was it like that for you, or was it just like, okay?
I was kind of planning like to leave because I was unhappy there. And then so when they let me go, I was just like, oh, wow, okay, this is... I wasn't really expecting to get let go that soon, but I feel like it was just like a push in the right direction.
Did you have any lessons learned, or like how did that shape your thinking on like, okay, getting pushed out versus gracefully exiting?
I created a savings fund called like Living Life on My Own Terms. So I've been saving money up for that. And it just made me kind of want to pay off my debt faster because I'm like, okay, unemployed. Well, now that I'm unemployed, it was kind of like, how can I don't want to be in the situation again where it's like I have all these bills to pay back, you know? So I figured like the lower my expenses, the better it would be. And so getting rid of that debt became like more of a motivation for me.
So did you literally have a savings account set up? We've had some people on it. I think the highest number so far, it's not a competition except for on Twitter. 13, I think, was the highest number. Although I saw His and Her Money, I think they have 16, but I don't think they spoke about that on the show. So either whom did you set that up for or whom did you go through? Or was that like a personal fund for yourself and a goal?
Oh, yeah, that was just a personal fund that I had in like my Capital One 360 account. So just like one of the goals just called one of the funds was just called Living Life on My Own Terms. So that's what I just named it.
Awesome. Awesome. And so I want to kind of walk through the beginning for the folks. So you say you graduated with $38,000 in debt, actually $38,500 for the auditors in the listening audience, worth of student loan debt. With interest and credit cards, that total debt was $47,500. Can you walk through kind of how that that debt was laid out? So was the rest just all credit cards? Did you have a car? Kind of what did that debt profile look like?
Okay, so the majority of it is the student loan debt. And then on top of that, the interest that I acquired during the years. And then the rest of that is like $5,000 of credit card debt. So that's kind of how the breakdown is.
And actually, for the people who, I think a lot of people struggle to find that, was it easy for you to figure out your student loan interest or total debt? I've read a lot of people, and I've actually saw an article recently where some people literally can't even find their total outlay of debt. Was that broken down for you? Because this might be a company that folks may want to use. Or was it like something you had to go out there and find and research?
No, well, when I log into my accounts every year for like taxes and I see like how much interest I paid, like I just go back and check the taxes, how much I paid every year.
So I'd like to that actionable item for folks is to go back and look through that tax outlay, because I know some people have struggled to even figure out, especially with student loans, when they have it through a number of companies, what their total debt is. And I think they can also pull that. I got to plug it again. I show it, share it on every show, but they could pull their annual credit report and they can get that for free as well. I get that.
Oh, yeah, that's too. Nice.
And so you started to get out of debt, and I read on the site, I think for you and for myself as well, it seemed like I don't want to speak for you. Was it a mental exercise or what inspired, okay, I want to get out of debt? What was that first step?
Okay, so I feel like the first step for me, I wasn't in the beginning of the journey, I wasn't really focused on being debt free. I feel like that didn't really come along until I started going to FinCon and meeting other people who were paying off their debt or debt free. And I was just like, oh, that's kind of cool. But in the beginning, it started with me checking my net worth, actually, and just seeing that I had a negative net worth. And I was just like, how am I going to get out of this negative net worth? And for me, it was like, OK, I have to increase my savings. I have to increase my investments and I have to pay off all my debt. But obviously, I couldn't do this all at the same time. So it was just like, first for me, it was like building the savings a little bit. Then it was investing, and then it was the debt. So that's kind of how I had the focus.
Now, a lot of people don't really think much about net worth until they get a little later in life. And maybe that's just me. I'm speaking from my own experience, because for years, I was like obsessed with my credit score. And I think that's a lot of other people too, where it's like my credit score is going up. That's great. And it's kind of like, if you don't need to leverage it, no, actually, I'll take that back. Now, it is important to have a good credit score, but it's one of those things where it's like, if you don't need to leverage it, it's not really doing anything for you versus your net worth, which is essentially, you know, how much money you have through the various different mediums. So is net worth always something that you've been concerned with? Or were you also one of those people who, you know, you focused a lot on kind of what your credit score was, and then you started realizing that the net worth is actually what's really important?
Yeah, no, I was never really a person that was focused on my credit score. I was always just like, okay, what's my net worth? Because I figured like if I'm not buying a home or I'm not buying a car, like not just like it doesn't matter, but like it just, yeah, for me, I just focused on the net worth.
Got it. When was the turning point where you really felt like you started to really dig in terms of understanding money? So was that the debt piece for you, or was there something else that came before that where you were kind of like, all right, I need to start paying more attention to this stuff?
Okay. So in high school, like I said, I just like spent all my money on clothes, shoes, and jewelry. Like I had a 2-finger ring that said candy on it. So I had no money savings then. Then it was college. I started reading a bunch of like money books in college, and I was just like, oh, this is cool. But I still didn't really get focused until probably like, I want to say like my first year out of college. That's when I was working like my second real official job. My older cousin was just like, what's your net worth? So he was the one that brought it to my attention. And I was just like, I don't know what my net worth is. And he just was like, well, if you're 23, I was 23 at the time. He's like, you should at least have $23,000 in assets. And I was just like, wait, I have nowhere near this number. I'm actually in the negatives. And so that's kind of where I started to my financial journey kind of started then.
And did he give any background on how they come to that number? Or what did he literally say by age? That's how many thousands did you have in net worth? And do you still buy into that advice?
No, he didn't really give me, that was all he just said. Like, if you're 23, you should have at least $23,000 in assets. And I was just like, oh, okay, well, I'm in the negatives. And he's like, well, you got to figure out how to do something. Like, do you want to eat filet mignon or oatmeal? Like, that's what he asked me. And I was like, dang, I do like oatmeal, but like.
What's your favorite flavor though?
Ooh, well, you know, I used to buy the box kinds, the little packets. Now I just make my own, just add like vanilla, brown sugar.
Oh man, yeah. y'all stepping it up. Y'all got this gourmet oatmeal thing.
I mean, it was classic Quakers, man. I was all about that apple cinnamon flavor back in the day.
Ooh, I like banana though. Throw some bananas in there too.
Yo, I didn't know anyone ate the banana flavor. So when I got the mixed pack, I usually just throw the banana flavor away. I'm like, you know, I like that. Yeah, man, I didn't F's with it. But I think this is a good segue because this actually, and I'm pretty sure people still be angry about this when this show drops. But this week, MarketWatch had an article that went, I guess I could call it viral. I don't know what viral means anymore. A lot of people got upset about it. But the title of the article was, by 35, you should have 2 times your income saved for retirement. And the internet streets weren't having it. So I'll get that in the show notes. But
ooh, I did see that article.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on like these milestone articles? And I think they did on purpose because they doubled down and did like 3 more articles about this once they realized it was popular. They didn't do as well because people kind of, I think we get that internet game now. But what do you think about these milestone posts? Like at 30, you should have this. At 40, you should have that. Do you buy into any of that? And if so, which one?
I just feel like everybody's life is different. You know, and I just think like depending, everyone has different goals and different things that they're trying to achieve. So yeah, I don't feel like I really base my life on like articles or I should, by this age, I should have this and that. Cause I don't know if a lot of people, if you don't have those things, now you're striving for these things. Like, is that really going to bring you happiness? So yeah, I think everybody just has their own journey and path to follow.
I like it. I like it. And it sounds like you actually did it in the right order, which is different from myself, possibly Rich, and definitely Jeff from our earlier show. So you said you got the savings fund and then you started tackling net worth and then you started tackling debt. How did you know when, okay, my savings fund is sufficient enough, I can move to this next category? Did you go 3 months, 6 months, or was it just when you reached a number like, that looks good? You know, I can get a lot of candy rings with that. You know, I'm good. And I'm gonna move on to the next category. Like, what was your, I'm ready to step into that next category.
Well, really, at first with the savings, it was just like, okay, at least let me just have $1,000 in my savings account. And it wasn't, even though it wasn't 3 months or 6 months, it was just like, okay, if I can just get to $1,000 saved for this, for my savings. And then it was just like, okay, if I could just get to $1,000 more saved so I can start investing. So that's kind of, I just started with the number of 1,000.
When you started investing, who did you go through, or either originally or whom do you use now?
Yeah. So like first it was like my 401k. I signed up with my job and then I started with Charles Schwab. So now I have Charles Schwab and I have Vanguard.
And so when you started with the debt piece, is there a system that you use there? And I know some people will know what that means. So there's Snowball, Avalanche, and then of course there's other, you can pay just over the minimums. Did you tackle all at once? Did you focus on the student loans? Like what order did you go in?
Well, first I paid off the credit card debt because that had like the highest interest. So I was just like, okay, let me just get rid of all this credit card debt that I have. Plus it was like the lowest balance. And then that's when I decided to move on to my student loan debt. And for that, I used the Snowball method of finding the amount, the smallest amount. So I wasn't really focused on the interest then. It was just, okay, what's the smallest number? And let me focus on that small number. So even if I had at the time like $30,000, in my head, I just didn't program my brain to believe that I had $30,000 worth of debt. It was just like, okay, I have $30,000, but right now my focus is this $4,000. So I have $4,000.
And some people have talked about it, said it sounds like you went at the credit card first because it had the highest interest and lowest balance. Mm-hmm. Did that then inspire your journey? Or because some people like, once I saw that first zero, you know, that motivated me to that next step. So I think some of these people actually, let me ask this a different way. How long was this journey? And then at what points were you inspired and what points were you down? And then how'd you get back on the debt horse?
Okay.
So- exactly.
So if I graduated in 2007, I graduated. I want to say I didn't get serious about paying off all my debt until 2015. So from 2007 to 2015, it was just like, okay, building my savings, investing, minimum on my debt payments. But then 2015 is when I started being like more involved with people in FinCon. I was just like, oh, maybe I could try to be debt free. That's when I created my own like debt challenge. And so in my own debt challenge that I created, I paid off one of my student loan balances. So once that balance was at zero, I was just like, maybe I can just pay it all of it off.
And is there any plan or just bad advice? Maybe they like that Market Watch article. I'm not saying it's bad, but a lot of people didn't like it. That you hear out there that's popular, but you just would recommend people ignore as far as financial advice goes?
I know. So it's tough with financial advice. I mean, even though I do blog about finances, I'm always just like, well, you guys got to make sure you do what's best for you and your journey. Everybody's journey is different. Yeah, I just think everybody should just do what works best for them. I don't really have any like benchmarks and stuff that people should follow per se.
And so you mentioned that you did a challenge. So what did that look like? That's question one. And then the other thing I was going to ask about is just in general, what have you found to be, or what did you find to be the biggest kind of struggle for you as far as getting out of debt? Because, you know, it's not like, all right, you know, I need to get out of debt. So let me just plop down, you know, $40,000 and pay off this balance. So so first, if you could tell us a little bit more about the challenge. And then after that, just like what were kind of some of the struggles that you went through as you were going through this process of getting out of debt?
Yeah, sure. So the challenge I created, I just found that paying off debt alone was kind of boring. So I said, what if I get other people involved? So it was me, and then I sent an email out to my list. And so it was me and 9 other people. So 10 of us, we ended up paying off $39,500 worth of debt in just 11 weeks. Wow. So yeah, so then other people were interested in like creating debt challenges. So then I helped Tanya create her Banish the Balance challenge. It's just been great to be able to help other people pay off this debt, like, you know, kind of create that movement. So that was the first question. What was the second thing you asked about? Oh, the hurdle. I think the hurdle is just sometimes just your thoughts or your mindset around it. Like, can I actually do this? Is it actually possible? Especially when it's going to take a long time. You know, sometimes you do see these articles, which is like, how I paid off $50,000 in 12 months. And you're like, whoa, it's not going to take me 12 months to pay this off. So I think just keeping that momentum going.
Was there any areas that you were, so the three largest expenses for most people seems to be home, transportation, and food in that order. Mm-hmm. Was there like a significant area that you cut in, or did you just reallocate how you were spending your income?
Oh no, absolutely. So after college, I couldn't find a job. So then I moved back home. So, and I'm still home. So I think that if I wasn't living at home, because I live in Boston and I had to pay like $3,600 in rent payments, I would not be able to be debt free right now. So I think moving back home is definitely something that's helped me in my financial journey. I mean, I still pay rent, but it's nowhere near $3,600 a month. So I think that's where I cut back for the home. Transportation, I don't own a car, so that also helps. I do just take public transportation. And then for food, food, I just stick to like a certain amount of money every month.
And so there's been, and we've had conversations before about the idea of moving back home. And I remember when I was younger, wow, that sounded like a real old person. Like back in my day, you know, dudes got shaded for living at home. And dudes probably still get shaded for living at home. But was that just like a conscious, like, you know what, this is what I need to do, and you felt good about it? Or was it one of those things where it's like, man, I got to move back home? Like, that's not what's up.
I mean, you know, well, I couldn't find a job, so I really didn't have a choice. So it's just like, where am I going to go, you know? But at the same time, I was just like, this is probably what's best for me. If there's these goals that I want to reach, why not just take advantage and be home for a few years and then go out on my own? But yeah, I think there is a lot of shame about moving back home. But for me, it was just like, if this is going to put me in a better position later on, like, why not?
And I actually appreciate you saying that, especially for some of our, I'm going to say the same thing, Rich, for our younger listeners, but honestly, maybe I even realize or wish I could do it now, is, and I'll get this in the show notes. There was a Smart Asset article where they did an analysis on those three expenses. And in every city, major city across the United States, at least transportation and home were 50% of the average household expenses. So you've been able to potentially save 50% for that expenses that other folks may have. But to the point of, okay, should I, and we had a listener question around that is, you know, should I move out now? And I think in his case, he could stay with his grandparents. I was like, stay.
Stay there.
Like, that is so much money that either you can put back in your pockets or you can reallocate, because I think it's a priority. You, and the way I've been phrasing this lately, stole it from somebody else, is buying back your time. So you're either going to pay for those months up front or on the back end. So you, that debt that you take away and pay off, now you don't have to pay in your 20s, 30s, and some people's 40s and 50s, just because you made that decision coming right out of school to stay at home. So I guess don't let that, I got to get out of school and master this adulting thing. Adulting isn't going anywhere. And it's a really
long,
it's a long marathon. That's what's crazy. You're older, like twice as long as you're quote unquote young. And it really doesn't matter what you describe as young. Older is twice as long as that.
Yeah, it's true. I know it is a transition, though, going from college and just having all this freedom to come back home. Like, okay, where you going? Like, you know, having to explain yourself again. But it's nice also not to have a debt payment. So
I, too, spent time in Boston. I was there for about 5 years. Shout out to Dorchester. And JP and the other town I lived in that I forgot because nothing happened there. Actually, it was Randolph. There we go. But I can actually remember that when I first got out of school and I moved out to Boston, you know, I had roommates, and then I got to a point where I was like, you know what? I need to be truly independent. And I did the thing where I went and lived by myself, and it was cool for the first year. You know, I had this spacious apartment, nothing on the walls, true bachelor life. I'm sure if people came through, they were really unimpressed. and I actually got to the point where I had to move out because rent was killing me so much, you know, and it was one of those stretches where I think it went up like $200 or something like that from 1 year to the next. And I actually had to move back in with a roommate to start saving money. And when I look back on that, I'm like, yo, that's something that I probably should have did sooner, but I stayed for an additional year because of pride, you know, versus actually saying, you know what, the more responsible thing to do is get a roommate. You know, as much as I like being on my own, it's going to put me in a better position financially. It's going to save me some of these headaches where I'm like literally waiting for the paycheck to hit, you know, and going over to the leasing office. Like, I just need two more days. I would second everything that's been said here. Actually, this conversation has brought up some really painful memories for me, so I'm going to fade to black.
That's so funny. Yeah, I live in Dorchester, so shout out to Dorchester.
And along those lines, you said something there that is not inaccurate, but I think that people overlook. So you said that I don't own a car, therefore I don't have transportation expenses. I think people write off the transportation expenses that they still have. So in that analysis, they said basically any means that you use to get around, not just a vehicle. So I think some people are like, well, I'm saving all this money because I don't own a car. And then they spend $900 on Uber drive. And I'm like,
I see what you're saying. I do take the train and I do still use Uber.
Which is why I think it's important for people. And I'm not going to preach the you must have a budget, but you at least need to know where your money is going for the first time. And so I use actually a list. Yeah, I have a list that I keep in my iPhone. It's just a simple in the little notepad that has all my bills. And Rich knows, because every now and then I get upset because for whatever reason, my insurance company's decided they want to raise my insurance $6 every 6 months. And I rant and rave about it and I can't do anything about it because it's still the cheapest. But it's important because, one, most people wouldn't even notice that $6, which is probably why they do it. And then number two, every time it goes up, I get upset. I get on the internet and I start price matching and comparing. And I think most people don't even go through that exercise because they don't know how much it was in the first place. They don't realize it went up. And I think that it's actually those, what we say, death by 1,000 debits. It's those little,
$6 things.
Right.
Even when I do money coaching for my clients. So even when I'm meeting with them every month and I'm going over their expenses, I'm like, do you have Netflix and Spotify? They're like, oh yeah, I forgot about Netflix and Spotify. Let's add that in there. I'm like, we need everything.
Yeah. What I was about to complain about is I'm back on the and I don't know if Rich, he got one too. I got the new iPhone, so I'm back on those monthly payments, man.
that
my grandchildren will be paying off apparently. I forgot about it, like, because I had the, I think I had the six before. And so, yeah, I paid it off. It was a little celebration, everything. I think it would like another year without having those payments. That little $30, yeah, man, over like, what, 24, 36 months. I'm like, yeah.
Well, it adds up. Yeah, I have Republic Wireless, so I got rid of Sprint. My Sprint bill then was like $80, $90. Now my cell phone bill is like $45 a month. So,
yeah, I'm starting to eyeball those little Boost Mobile commercials a little bit closer. Exactly. Than I used to.
Before, you used to shame people like Boost Mobile. Now I'm like, wait a minute, nah, Boost Mobile ain't too bad after all.
Yeah, I was, I think I was in Chicago and I saw a commercial for one that I think is actually, it's a cheaper company, it's like $45 a month, but I think it's actually managed by either Sprint or T-Mobile. I'm like, I was all in that commercial. I was like, $45, unlimited data. I started crunching some numbers. And the reason I bring that up, and I'll get this in the show notes, I did one about debt to income for how much debt you can afford. And I don't think people, especially when they move, actually, I know they don't because, you know, I've been on the hiring side and I've talked to people about this after the fact, and I think Rich as well. So I did an analysis on how far $55,000 would stretch or would be equal to in six comparable cities. So I used Austin as my base because that's where I'm from. So in New York, you would have to make $130,000 comparatively for $55,000. And then I used San Francisco, which is $100,000. Shout out to Rich and Cali. Chicago, it's $66,000. Atlanta, it's $57,000. And then I use San Antonio because I knew it was a little bit cheaper and it's right up the road. It's $50,000. And I, for whatever reason, people can't seem to wrap their head around that. They're like, yo, I'm balling out in South Dakota. I make $50,000. I'm like, I don't think that stretches as far. And so it's interesting to see those arguments. But I think that's definitely something that people want to keep in mind. It's a simple calculator. I got this one from CNN Money and I'll get that in there. So for folks that are either going to relocate, and it could be, I mean, even going from city to city within the same state, it can be a significant difference if you're moving from a suburb or town to a large major metropolitan. So I think folks need to keep that in mind for that cost of living adjustment.
Yeah, that's really important.
You also, I want to highlight two blogs. So the blog is Young Yet Wise. You have a number of favorites on there that the people can get go over and view, and I'll get that in the notes, but I want to highlight these two. So you talked about four powerful things that can happen when you begin to track net worth. You talked about that in the beginning of the show. And number one, you said, was be intentional about your money goals. Why do you think that's number one?
I think it's important to be intentional because if you don't really even know like what your goals are, what you're aiming towards, it's going to be hard for you to even reach those goals. So I think it is important to be like intentional, just so that you can accomplish the things that you want to reach.
I feel so validated because I mentioned intentionality on the last episode, Marcus. Yes. Yes.
Yay.
I got you. And it looks like you were either influenced by or inspired by, shout out to Jay Money of Budgets Are Sexy, at Budgets Are Sexy. You should follow him. He's got a great following and a really motivational guy. And the same website, budgetsaresexy.com. How did you go about tracking your net worth? Did you do it manually or did you go through an app or was that an evolution? Like you used to track it manually, but now you use an app. So what did you use to figure out your net worth?
Yeah, so J Money definitely inspired me because before that, I wasn't really tracking my net worth every month. So I started tracking it in May of 2015. So that's when I first started. And I just used like an Excel sheet then. Now I do have used Personal Capital, but I still have the Excel sheet as well.
What did you learn once you started tracking it?
Once I started tracking it, it became like more of a motivation for me because then I could actually see like my every month when I paid down like my debt that my net worth was actually going up. So it was just like, okay, that kind of kept me motivated to keep paying more money towards my debt and towards my investments because I could see it growing.
And you can say no here. I know some people do. You don't have to be one of them. either the number or percentage that you have, how have you seen your net worth change since you started tracking it?
Okay, so... Dang, you're going to make me log in. I didn't check my net worth yet this month. I'm like, you're about to make me log into my personal account.
Last month is fine.
Okay, so when I first started in May of 2015, my net worth was like $5,440. And now it's at $52,335.
Oh, wow. Let's see, five times. That's almost like a 10.
Yeah, that's like over. A 10X, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Very impressive. I appreciate you sharing that with the listening audience. And along those lines, you also talked about having accountability partners. How did that help you? And then how did you find those people? I know a lot of our folks struggle with either having a small network or finding people that are like-minded financial goals. So how did you find your people?
So I found my people... when I did the debt challenge was through my email list. So I just sent out an email like, hey, does anybody want to join my debt challenge? So that's kind of how I found my people. And it was great to have people that want to accomplish the same goals as you, because sometimes you have friends that just want to spend money all the time. You're like, wait, I got these goals I'm trying to reach. So y'all got goals y'all trying to reach, because every weekend y'all hit me up. So I think that's why it is important to surround yourself with like-minded people.
And so as far as those people, was it primarily through the challenge, or were there also like regular calls kind of in that mastermind format? And so for those that are unfamiliar, mastermind groups are basically, it's a few people, they get together. Usually it's on some regular cadence of calls, whether it be weekly or monthly or biweekly. And usually each week there's somebody who's on the hot seat or at the podium, and we're tackling their issue specifically. So for you, was it primarily through like a Facebook group and the challenge, or did you have, you know, two or three people that you actually connected with and spoke with on a regular basis? How did you structure that, if that was the case?
No, it was just primarily the challenge. Got it. Then every month I'm just updating like my social media. Basically my social media kept me accountable. So yeah.
And in your second one here, you say ways to make money when one source of income isn't enough. You have a quote in here that had me, you know, stomp my feet and clap my hands. You know, I'm easily excited. And it was, school doesn't exactly prepare you for being laid off, or whole 4 years at school are structured around working for someone else. Yes, finger snaps.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, how did that layoff experience, or did you feel that way before the layoff experience? And then how did that shape your thinking about the corporate ladder, corporate America? And what did you need to do to bring in your own money so you weren't dependent on that?
Yeah. So like, okay. So even after I graduated, it took me like 6 years to even find a job. And then the first job that I did find, it was like a small company, maybe like 8 people working there. So I was only making like $30,000 a year. And I'm just like, okay, how am I going to survive off of $30,000? My loans just kicked in. But then I was only at that place for like 6 months, and then they let me go. So it was just like, what am I going to do now? So at that time I started freelancing. So I was helping people like build their websites, creating like different logos for them. Thank God I did have those skills, because that's what I went to school for. So I have a design background, and then I was able to like bring in some money at that time. And then I started applying for other jobs. So then I got my full-time job. But while I still have my full-time job, I'm still growing my blog and still growing like my freelance design business, just so I wouldn't have to depend just on my 9-to-5 money.
So how did you balance that? You know, because there's a lot of people who are doing the same thing. In some ways, we're doing the same thing where, you know, you've got the day gig, but then you're also freelancing or you're doing something on the side. How did you manage to balance doing both?
I feel like it was just like nights and weekends. That's kind of where I would do it. Or if sometimes if it's slow at work, I'm doing work. I was doing work at the job too. I hope they're not listening, but whatever. Yeah, I think I was just like sometimes doing it on the job or my lunch break, taking podcast calls, you know, like I just had to find a way.
And is there any advice that you would offer for, I'd say, current students? Because no one ever told me this. Like, I thought I was going to come out here, you know, put the industry on his ear, make my 6 figures and pay off my debt in, you know, a few months. Like, that's just what you do. That's what you go to school for. My advice on that has changed slightly. Like, you can do anything you want, but someone may not pay you for it. And so I advise students now that if you're in school and you're majoring in a major that won't be around or be paid for in, you know, 6 months or 6 years, you might want to start looking into other things. So I advise people, like, if you like money, to one, acknowledge that that's not something to feel guilty about, but you need to align that with a profession that pays a lot of money. I feel like what a lot of people do is, I have a hobby that I like, and I want someone to pay me a lot of money for that. And I'm like, that's not how this game works. Like, what you're talking about is a job. And so you can design and do something that someone will pay you for. But I don't think it's the company's responsibility to pay you for this thing you like, unless the two match and align. So is there any similar or different advice that you would offer to current students that you wish someone had told you?
Yeah, no, I feel like I have similar advice. Just that your 9-to-5 isn't solely responsible for how much money you can make. You do have to kind of make money on your own. And also just realize that you're always going to be kind of working for someone else. So this isn't like me like bashing corporate America, you know, even though I'm working for myself now, it's like even though I'm supposedly my own boss, like now it's just like my clients are my bosses, you know, my audience is my boss. So it's not like I'm still listening to someone. But I just think it's important to, you know, just always find ways to make more money. And if you're getting paid to do something at your 9-to-5, chances are somebody will pay you outside of your 9-to-5 to do those same things.
I like that.
And so what do you find to be the biggest difference in terms of mindset as it relates to working in corporate America versus doing your own thing?
So the biggest mindset.
And so like, for example, for me, I feel like within corporate America, it's kind of like, I mean, it's essentially a game. And a lot of people refer to corporate America as essentially playing the game. And so I know that in corporate America, if I do X, Y, Z, I will get this result. I'll get promoted. I'll get a new job. If I answer these questions appropriately, things will work out.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Versus entrepreneurship, there's a lot of unknown. So are there any kind of major differences that you've had to adjust to from going from working in corporate America to working for yourself?
Oh, yeah. There's like so many adjustments. I don't even know if we have time, though. I feel like when going into the corporate world, first of all, I didn't negotiate. So it was just like, I was just thankful for the opportunity. You know, now I work for myself. I'm like, okay, if I want to get paid what I'm worth, like I have to charge a certain amount of money. You know, I can't be afraid to ask for more. So I think that's one difference. And another difference, I think, it's still just because you work for yourself doesn't mean you don't have to you still have to show up for yourself, even though there's not a boss waiting for you to be there. You still have to get up at a certain time. You still have to have those routines set in place and you still have to manage your own day. So I think that's kind of like the two biggest mindset shifts is really just knowing what you're worth, asking for more money and creating your schedule and sticking to the schedule.
So from that, I'm actually going to get two other things in the show notes here. We talked about a piece on the importance of salary negotiation, which could be the difference between over the length of your career, $600,000. So it is a significant difference, and it's something that folks need to focus on. And the other I just lost, so if it comes back to me, I will find a way to get it in the show notes and talk about it here. Okay. Coming from your blog, you actually had a great quote here that I'll wrap up with and allow you to kind of talk about either any calls to action that you have or people, especially on that debt piece. You mentioned a few times your list, if you want people to subscribe to that, where they can find you. But you have to find ways to raise your income on your own, because at the end of the day, no one's going to care about your money than you. I think that's great advice. And actually, the other piece was millionaires, which everyone likes and seems to be a round number that people wrap their head around.
I don't like Kanye.
I'm not sure he's a millionaire. You know, he's got what, $32 million in debt. I wonder, might want to review his net worth.
Oh wow!
Which he admitted to. But that is, they have multiple income streams, and I think school doesn't teach you that. School teaches you how to go and make one income stream at one job that you're allegedly going to do for 40 years. And I think we are all waking up to that's not the reality for whether I really say everyone, but definitely for millennials and definitely for the next generation, which I think is Z, but I possibly made up, is that status quo is not going to work for us going forward. So I'm really a big proponent, and I'm glad that you share, and I will continue to share, bring great guests on the show to talk about how you can get those multiple income streams. I think that's going to be the new norm. Whether it's the gig economy or whatever it may be. But I think folks need to start to break from this mindset. One, it's too variable dependent. And then number two, it literally might not be enough to afford that cost of living that we talked about earlier, that just one income stream, especially with these stagnant wages and other things that we'll need to go into on another show. So any call to actions or where people can find you on the social medias?
Yes, you guys can just find me at youngyetwise.com. I have my money coaching there, as well as a free 5-day email series you guys can sign up for, as well as I'm on Instagram at youngyetwise, but the E is a 3.
And I think you had a YouTube channel as well?
Yeah, my YouTube channel. Well, everything's just, if you just go to youngyetwise.com, my YouTube channel will be there.
Cool. So I appreciate you coming on the show. Rich, any last minute wrap-up thoughts?
I'm still thinking about that painful experience in Randolph. That's all I got.
Yeah, I couldn't remember the Jerry Springer wrap-up moment, but that would be here if you had it. Thank you, Candace, for coming on the show. And I know the people will get some great advice by visiting youngyetwise.com.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Take care of yourself and each other. Okay.
Yes, I know y'all learned a lot, and we keeps it reals around here. I felt like there was a lot of real fact chopping and a lot of real learning. I even learned some things myself and maybe some easier ways that I can get ahead, because I think like some in the listening audience, if they're like myself, I think I need to get everything right before I make even the first step in the journey. So I might just take this next $1,000 and put it towards investing as far as an investment account goes. And I think you talked about exploring that avenue as well. Have you either made that leap, or has this episode inspired you?
I'm still navigating my way through, good brother. So at this point, I got some money that's in my Stash account. I got some money that's still in the Robinhood account. Haven't done too much with it. And it's interesting because she talked about how you got to do what's best for you. And so I'm like, you are right. I do need to do what's best for me. So I'm still right now looking at some of the different options that are out there in terms of apps, programs. I've had people say, nah, bruh, you need to be doing that IRA and all of this other stuff. So I'm actually planning to set up a call with one of the Vanguard advisors who we can talk to for free through work. And I think through my job, they'll talk to you for free for like 30 minutes or something like that. So planning to have more of an update on a future episode. But this was good reassurance that I need to make sure that I'm doing what's right for me and not just abiding by something that I read in some article.
Yeah, I agree. And I want to clarify there, if I do move into investing, I mean like independent active investing. So right now I'd say I have passive investments. I have money automatically allocated to my 401k and two other investment accounts, one of which is paused for now because it's stuck with another organization. Literally stuck, not like I haven't failed to transfer. Like they own that until I like think I turn 59 and a half. But that is so far away. I'm sure I'll be looking into that paperwork at 58 and a half.
Yeah.
And speaking of and a half and making these money changes, I also got a new financial piece for Go Banking Rates. You can check it out. But we set it up, made it easy for you. Just go to paychecksandbalances.com/GBR. If you already follow the Facebook group, you've already got the insider link. But for those of you listening for the first time, paychecksandbalances.com/GBR.
And that's where you're going to keep all the articles, everything you're producing for them.
Yes, sir.
Cool, man. So if you enjoyed today's episode or found it useful, be sure to share with your network and hit us with those 5 stars in Apple Podcasts or your favorite app. So we've had some people say like, yo, I don't use Apple Podcasts. I'm on Android. I use this. I use that. Whatever you're on, hit us with the 5 stars, whatever the top mark is for the review, if it's an option for you. And also say a few words about the show so people can get a sense of why you enjoy listening to the podcast and the various people that we've had on. So today's review comes from FamUChick18, and the headline in that review is, my parents say, thank you. 5 stars. I heard Marcus on an episode of Colorful Lives, and I decided to give this podcast a try, and boy, am I happy that I did. This show has literally changed my outlook on my financial and work life to the point of where my parents see a difference. Yo, fam, we're making moves.
Changing lives.
My parents have been having the exact same conversation about financial management and where do I want to be in the next 5 years, maybe because they're on the tail end of the baby boomer generation. I'm a millennial. I just look at them like, yeah, y'all don't get it. I'm still in the 50 range trying to catch up. I'm assuming she means episode wise, but I've become more diligent with my budget, getting more involved in networking my professional associations and talking to my boss about my goals and more opportunities available for me at my current place of employment. Your show makes me feel like I'm not the only one making not so smart decisions, but you give solutions and tips instead of criticizing and harping on the issue, which I really appreciate. So this show has really changed how I approach my life, and I really do appreciate you guys for what you do. And my parents say thank you as well. Yo, man, this one really tugs at the heartstrings, man. Like, I feel some dust or some mist. I feel like I got something going on right now.
Yeah, man. When it first came in, I told you the allergies started acting up a little bit. You know, this is what we do it for. We do it for the people. That's you, the listening audience. So we appreciate these 5 stars, anything that you send to the emails and everything. We do get an opportunity to review all of those. I know we don't get an opportunity to reply all of those, but do know that we are taking it all in pause. And if you'd like to follow us on the social medias, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Pay Balances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. Follow our individual accounts. You can find me at the Marcus Garrett with one T on Twitter, two T's everywhere else on earth. And Rich is available at I Am Rich Jones.
I am.
I'm always ready for that. Don't forget to grab our free 15-minute money plan by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email. Just 15 minutes might change the next 15 years.
I like how you put that. And so we want to thank everyone for listening to this episode. And so until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.